Hello, and welcome to the Austin Therapy Podcast. Today, we are reading chapters 15, 16, and 17 of Northanger Abbey. I'm Kate. I have a background in psychology, and I'm joined by
Teresa, and I have a background in social work.
And we're just going to dive right in. What did you think, T?
I thought these chapters were interesting. I have lots of feelings about Isabella, which is not surprising. So we'll get to those. I think, yeah, she takes up quite a bit of this time in these chapters. So I think she will be a hot topic in this episode.
Yeah, basically get introduced right into the Thorpes because Catherine is heading over there. And we get to hear about the adventure that happened the day before. They did not go to Blaise Castle.
Right. And so it's interesting. I'm reading a used copy of the book and I'm marking it up, you know, with all of my thoughts. But someone else has highlighted in here and they don't highlight often, but every once in a while there's something. And the one thing they've highlighted in these three chapters was Blaise Castle had never been thought of. And so, like, I think it's so poignant that whoever read this book before me, which is not a big highlighter, highlighted that as a key point.
Oh, yeah, because they made such a big deal about it. And Catherine's like, oh, like they didn't even go. And I think so. Something that I will say, and that I'm going to try and point out as we go along, I really enjoyed Catherine in these chapters. Yes, she's gentle and kind and always trying to be a polite person.
Mm-hmm.
But she held boundaries and called people out. And I really appreciated that. I guess I'm always looking at this and seeing Catherine's perspective where she's like, fuck, they didn't even think about Blaise Castle. Like, who the fuck cares? And that, yes, there's a little bit of relief because her friends aren't mad at her. And I get that feeling. But there's also a part of Catherine that's picking up on things being ridiculous.
Well, and I actually wondered if it was like, if I put myself into Catherine's shoes and I think about them not going to Blaise Castle, how much that would diminish my FOMO.
Right.
Because when I initially was reading it and when we had ended the last chapters and Catherine had been relieved that things had gone well without her going and that, you know, they had a good time. I did have this feeling of like, oh, I wonder if she's going to like regret not going because they had such a good time. It's going to be like really played up. And there was this thing she wanted to do and she didn't get to do it. But then they didn't do it. And I think that kind of settles when I put myself into her shoes of like, oh, actually, I didn't miss anything. It's totally fine.
And I think there's definitely aspects of Catherine realizing that her relationship with Isabella isn't going to be damaged by not going.
I mean, yeah. And I think we as readers maybe understand that that relationship is very surface and tenuous in some ways. But I think as long as it serves Isabella, won't actually be damaged. Like, I don't think there's a lot of risk in it.
I think there's, because people often get frustrated with Catherine as a character because they think she's naive. If I'm looking at it from that perspective, you definitely see with this relationship with Isabella that Catherine doesn't recognize the power that she has and she lacks that confidence. I would throw out that maybe Catherine, it's not so much that she lacks confidence, it's just that she thinks everybody is good. And so, is that naive or is that just an optimistic perspective? Because I the more I reread, the more I'm like, Catherine's not actually being naive. She sees the weird things that Isabella is doing. She's paying attention to them. She's just not calling them out because she doesn't think they're that important. And she does disagree with Isabella. She just doesn't do it with the force of like someone who's like, no, you're wrong.
Right. She doesn't take a Lizzie approach to it.
I think, but there are times when she just doesn't think it's worth
arguing.
It's
not worth her while. Yeah, she's not going to get into an argument for argument's sake.
Yeah. So that was the thing that I wanted to say before we kept going. So because there's a few points where I want to point it out. Yeah.
Well, and then we get Isabella's proclamation, which she doesn't actually come out and say it. And it like takes Catherine a little while to like come around to like, what the heck is she talking about? I don't understand. And all I wrote was drama. Like, Isabella is the epitome of like, she loves the drama. She wants to be in the, like, she wants everything to feel very dramatic and intense and played up in that way.
I also think this is her playing something up so that Catherine has to ask her.
Exactly.
And
it's her way of trying to engage someone to her and draw someone into kind of like her web of drama and madness.
That arch eye of yours, it sees through everything. And Catherine's like, what the fuck are you talking about?
When just this line, her brother and her friend engaged, all I wrote was boo. I'm not happy about it, if I'm honest. Yeah. And I'm like, I'm not happy about it, but I also like, James has not been my favorite big brother. Like, he's kind of been a little wishy-washy for my liking. I feel like he far too much agrees with the Thorpes, and we know how much I dislike them. So part of me is also like, well, I actually don't care enough about him to care if this is going to be an unhappy marriage.
Do you think that that sort of like being drawn in by the Thorpes and just kind of being very, I don't, it's not quite passive because they're not passive individuals, but the Morlands do seem to very much like want to go with the flow and not cause conflict. Do you think that that's a characteristic that's like a family trait, something that they maybe, that says something about how maybe they were brought up?
I think that's an interesting thought. And when I think about what I, because we don't know really anything about the other Moreland siblings, so I can't necessarily say about them. But when I think about the response that is anticipated and received from the parents regarding James's engagement, I do think there is a passive nature to them as well.
I wonder if, like, it goes back to that in the circle that they grew up in, where they're living quite remote and it's the same sort of people every single day, that that's probably a positive characteristic. Maintaining friendships with your neighbors and like not making a big deal out of little things.
Communal living.
Exactly. But then when you transition into faster paced places and you get exposed to people who take advantage of you, but you're still stuck in that very trusting mindset of like, people are good. The people around me, yeah, they might annoy me sometimes, but it's just little things. I can put up with that. And there is like this, I don't know, there's some wholesomeness to the Morlands that I love. And then there's also this like, guys, no, these are the bad guys.
Yeah, I think it's a wholesomeness and a naivete. And I think it's context specific.
Yeah.
Right? Because I think in their context, they're wholesome. And I wouldn't classify them as naive because in their situation, they're very versed and knowledgeable. But I think in when taken outside of that, that's when it can start becoming naive.
I don't know. They're interesting, but also very boring characters.
I do write here pretty early on. I question the con that Isabella is running.
Why do you question it?
I mean, I think, and it comes out a little bit later on, that like there's this one line of, I feel that I shall be so much more attached to my dear Moreland family than to my own. And she talks a little bit about money and I think there seems to be the sense that maybe the Morelands have money, which we know is not true necessarily. Like, they're doing fine.
Yeah.
But they're not, right? Like, they're not as well off as, like, I think the Bennets are, right? So they're, like, okay, but they're not rich. And they're certainly not a Darcy, right? Like, there are levels to this. And I think to the fact that what we know is the Thorpes it's the three sisters, the mom, and then John. And I'd imagine John is not great with money. And that would not surprise me.
Yeah.
So it just started getting my brain going of like, I don't actually think Isabella is in love with this guy or wants to be with this guy. I think there's something else under this.
I think Isabella's in love with an idea.
Yeah.
If I'm giving her the benefit of the doubt as a person who maybe just doesn't understand their intentions, she's kind of stuck in a delusional space.
Mm-hmm.
Like what she thinks reality is not what reality is.
Exactly. And like, there's even a little bit of when she's like, I've never saw anybody so handsome before. And Catherine's like, I mean, okay, but like, he's not that good looking.
Here, Catherine secretly acknowledged the power of love, for though exceedingly fond of her brother and partial to his endowments, she had never in her life thought him handsome.
Right.
Okay, well, you must be really in love with him, because he's fine.
Right, like, he's average, maybe.
And I think that also goes back to Catherine, like, at the start of the book, not liking the idea of being sold the sort of like, you're the most beautiful person in the room. She just wants a true compliment, which is like, you're cute. Like, and I like your brain, and I like how you think, and I like your manners. Catherine's like, I hear a little bit of her like kind of rolling her eyes at Isabella.
Well, and I think some of this part about familiarity between like what Isabella maybe thinks and what is reality versus what's being experienced. I picked up on it that Isabella never calls him James. She always calls him Moreland. And we've talked, especially in this book, how Jane Austen uses names to convey relationship and to convey connection mm-hmm. between people and a deepening of intimacy. And so she's dropped the Mr. off of it. So like, there's maybe a little bit of familiarity, but she's still not calling him James, despite the fact that they're engaged.
Right. And Moreland is what her brother John calls him. Kind mm-hmm. of like that schoolboy thing of calling your friends by their last name. It's a weird thing. It's a non-romantic name to be picking up. It's what your brother calls his chum.
Right. Yeah, it doesn't seem romantic.
She calls her brother by his first name. I don't mm-hmm. know. There's just like many layers of like Isabella not really knowing the real James.
Yes. Well, and I don't think she cares to.
No. What did you think about her bringing up Miss Andrews?
I have no thoughts on this because I have no memory of this in this moment.
So remember,
prompt me a little bit with other stuff.
You remember that Isabella a few chapters ago was talking about her intimacy with Catherine, and she was putting down her friend Miss Andrews and being like, you're so much better than her, even though this is the intimate friend that I've had for years. You're so much better. I'm so much closer to you. You know all of these things. And yet she like inserts her into this story of the intimacy that she has with Catherine's brother. And it's done in such a weird, I'm showing off that I won.
Mm-hmm.
She was prettier, but he chose me
mm-hmm.
sort of way, even though a little while ago she was putting her friend down, like just to hear the narrative change so much.
It's entirely insecure.
Oh, yeah.
Isabella does not have a security within herself. And she spends a lot of time, and it's interesting because she's done this with that Mrs. Andrews and Catherine comparison. She also does this with her and James a little bit, that she says, like, my fortune will be so small, they never can consent it. Your brother, who might marry anybody, right? Like, it's almost as if she's trying to build herself up on the fact that he's chosen her.
Yeah.
And so it's almost like it's not quite gaslighting herself. There, it's an interesting dynamic that she outwardly projects to other people, but is also internally figuring out.
I think when people are truly in love, sometimes the message comes across and they'll even say the words of like, I don't feel worthy of the person I'm with. And what I'm hearing from Isabella is not, here are all the wonderful things about your brother that I love and how am I going to live up to him? What I hear her doing is like she's trying to prove that she's worthy because she knows she's not, because she doesn't actually love him.
Mm-hmm. And I don't know if she would know that or recognize that what she's feeling is not love.
I don't, this family doesn't feel like a family that understands what secure love feels like.
Yeah. It makes me really wonder what their parents' relationship looked like. Like, how was that role modeled for them as kids and growing up?
Yeah. And like also recognizing the absence of their father and how that maybe shaped their ideas of what relationships are because they had that loss of income.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's part of why this family is like so driven with status and income, is because they have to feel like they have to claw their way back up.
Yeah. Which makes sense.
They still suck.
Well, yeah, it can be a both end situation.
The dialectics.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And James goes off to ask his parents for permission. And Catherine spends a lot of time being like, I'm sure it's going to be fine.
Yeah.
My parents are nice people. My brother seems happy. I'm sure it's going to be fine. She has to say it over and over and over again.
Well, and then the fact Catherine ends up being in that position of calling Isabella humble for not believing that she's worthy, even though she hasn't actually used those words. And it's almost mm-hmm. like she's trying to pull it out of Catherine for Catherine to reassure her that she's worthy of him. It's so insecure. Ugh.
Yeah. And it makes me feel a little sad for her in some ways. Like, I did write down at one point, I was like, am I too harsh on Isabella? I feel bad for her at times that she's like, she's kind of a sad character.
Yeah, well, yeah, she's a sad character in that we see this potential that if she just shifted a little bit and was a little bit kinder and saw the world from a different perspective, she could be happier. I think also because we see her manipulating people that we care about, it's like, okay, like you are making choices.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, she's definitely an active participant in her story.
Yeah.
And in her experience.
And we'll get to some, maybe some of her shittiness in later bits.
Oh, good. I mean, I'm not surprised. I don't like any of the Thorpes. So
even just in these chapters, there's hints of Isabella being not so great. Yeah. So Catherine provides her with all of those lovely reassurances. And then they end up getting the letter back.
And it's as Catherine said, that her parents were nice people and were like, James, you're happy? Great. We'd love for you to be happy. How can we help?
Yeah. And I think it's interesting that while they're waiting for it, Catherine is sitting with the Thorpes and like recognizing these weird dysfunctional ways that they're sitting, the ones with the secret and the ones without the secret, and how the family's like bizarrely like divided but competitive, and like they like holding things over top of each other. It's very, she's sitting back being like, this is weird.
Yeah, this is a weird family.
Yeah. And like, let's keep in mind that Catherine has called her younger siblings idiots. She thinks that her siblings were stupid when they had to learn things. It's not that she doesn't understand that there should be conflict within families. She just doesn't understand this level of disharmony.
Well, and why in this scenario?
Yeah.
Right? Like, it's a weird thing to be like not talking about with the younger siblings. Of like, I get wanting to wait until it's confirmed, maybe, but like, it also doesn't feel like this needs to be a thing to like laud over someone. Like, it's just very strange that it's coming up in this type of scenario.
Right. And it's to Catherine's simple feelings, this odd sort of reserve seemed neither kindly meant nor consistently supported. And its unkindness she would hardly have forborne, pointing out had its inconsistency been less their friend. And then Anne and Maria, the younger siblings, are just like, whatever.
Yeah, they're like, you know, this is life. This is how it always is.
Yeah. I do wonder if maybe the younger siblings will turn out a little bit better, but it does seem like Isabella and John are sort of paired in this very schemey sort of way.
Mm-hmm.
And their mom too.
Yeah, I know. I think when I think about like what's the con here, part of me wonders like, how's the mom involved in this? I just wonder.
Yeah. Well, yeah. What are her expectations? What kind of conversations have they had? And like, she seems very happy when the consent comes.
Mm-hmm. They do get pretty quickly into like, and we're waiting on a second letter to talk about how our life is going to be lived and how we're going to make money. Like that comes up pretty quick after they get the consent.
Mm-hmm.
It's definitely at the top of people's minds.
Yeah. What do you think of creepy John Thorpe?
Oh my God. I just think about if I was in this era, I'd have such a hard time. Because like nowadays, I can just tell men to fuck off when they're weird and creepy like this.
I mean, you can and you can't. Like,
yes, there's a line to it. Yes.
You got to be safe.
Yes. But I feel like it's at least increased a little bit since then. And I just hate that Catherine has to essentially be like, yeah, okay.
I feel like Catherine is doing a really good job of just gray rocking him.
Oh, yeah.
I should explain that gray rocking is a technique that people use to divert toxic behavior by acting unresponsive.
And I love that she's also like, all right, I gotta go. Talk to you later. Have a nice night.
Yeah, he starts by being like, I'll come pay my respects to Fullerton. And she's like, oh, yes, you should come and see my parents. They would like to see you. And I just love how she's just dismissing everything while still being kind. Oh, but you would want to see me? Yeah, of course. I like seeing my friends. Oh, yes, of course. We're so similar. And I just love how smoothly she's just like, maybe we do think alike. I don't know. There are a lot of things that I don't know my own mind about.
Yep. She's just doing such a great job.
She just doesn't give in to any of it. And then at the end, she's like, see you in Fullerton.
Well, she tries to end this conversation like 15 times. And he just keeps going and going and going. He does a little bit of what Isabella does too, of like, I don't know anybody like you, trying to kind of like do that, like build you up, draw you in, weird thing,
make us seem more intimate than we are.
Yeah. And all I wrote was good people. Like, he doesn't know any good people. That wouldn't surprise me. I don't think he keeps the best company, which makes me kind of sad about James.
Do you think she understood what he was trying to imply? Did you?
I mean, I understood it. I don't think Catherine's that dumb that she didn't understand it, especially like given the way he has acted in the past. As much as we talk about Catherine being naive, I don't necessarily think she's like oblivious. And he's pretty blatant about it too. His like, did you ever hear that old song, going to one wedding brings on another? And then he's asking about whether or not she's going to be at the wedding. And then he says, and then, you know, I say, then, you know, we may try the truth of this same old song.
I just love Catherine here. Maybe, but I never sing. Well, I wish you had a good journey. I dine with Miss Tilney today and must be going home.
Yeah, she's like, I'm going to go now.
And I think this is the thing. Like, for me reading this, I see Catherine just gray rocking him and not giving him anything. I think other people might sit back and think that Catherine's just missing the point of what he's saying.
Mm.
But I actually think she's masterful in this interaction. This is one of those moments where I'm like, I love you, Catherine.
Yeah. Well, and I think in the way she tries to extricate herself from this conversation feels very, thoughtful is not the right word. It feels very skillful that she is like, all right, I got to go to dinner. All right, well, I'm going to go. Actually, no, I'm still not going to give you any commitment to what you're asking about. All right, I'm leaving. All right, have a nice night. Okay, bye. Yeah. Right, like she just keeps reiterating the same point in attempts to let him hear it.
Catherine does, that's entirely what she's doing in this. It's just, she's gray rocking. She's saying, nope, this doesn't matter. I'm getting out of this conversation. And yeah, I think as two mental health professionals, we sit back and we're like, this is great.
Mm-hmm. It's how you deal with someone like him.
Yeah.
Because,
well, and Isabella too. And we've seen her use this strategy a little bit with Isabella and gives her more of a benefit of the doubt because she actually likes Isabella.
Well, because
it's established she does not like John.
Right. They actually have an intimacy and Isabella hasn't like maniacally laughed as she's driving her away from a prior commitment. Yeah, like John Thorpe has acted the villain. Isabella has just been
behind the villain.
Yeah. And a little deceitful, but John Thorpe has like I'm so
he's
excited
outright
to
lied
watch
to her and to Miss Tilney.
I'm so excited to watch the movie version of this or the film version of this because all I can picture is like him and the horse being like, ha ha, like maniacally laughing. And like, I can vividly picture that scene in my brain.
Well, I'm glad that Jane Austen has made you vividly imagine something.
Mm-hmm.
John Thorpe maniacally laughing. See, I more go for like Tilney and his cute smiles, but you're just full on.
I mean, it's just classic villain nature. Exactly. That's the laugh I wanted to do, not whatever I did earlier.
So yeah. Catherine Gray rocks really well.
She does. She does a really good job.
And then she gets home to the Allens, who are just like, oh yeah, we expected that. Catherine's like, okay. And I think this is, again, one of those things where Catherine is maybe seeing the world a little bit naively.
Mm.
And I can understand why people feel that way in some ways about Catherine, because the Allens picked up on the fact that Isabella and James were going that way. But I think that also speaks to Catherine's mentality about romance in general.
Mm-hmm.
And again, that sort of like security that she has of not assuming herself in love with someone until she feels secure attachment.
Well, I think about them riding in the carriages together and how, as a reader, what you know is happening is that James and Isabella are forming a relationship and it's deepening. What you're reading about what is forming for John and Catherine is like, that is not happening. But I think back to Mr. Allen's guidance of like, actually, you probably shouldn't be riding in that carriage on your own with that guy, because it does create that sense of intimacy from others' perspectives and potentially from like John's perspective, that it makes sense why the Allens are like, oh yeah, we kind of saw that. That makes sense.
Right.
But Catherine wasn't picking up on it in that same way because it didn't mean the same thing to her.
Well, and again, it's that sort of, Catherine doesn't do the social dance. Catherine is just, well, we're going to get to it where Tilney actually gives her the compliment.
Mm-hmm.
Catherine's just doesn't understand what the rules are. She just thinks that you should go with your feelings and things shouldn't be this serious.
Right. And so then Catherine goes over to the Tilneys. And I love this initial line. Catherine's expectation of pleasure from her visit in Maelstrom Street were so very high that disappointment was inevitable. Because I think that's a very relatable feeling.
Yeah. She was looking forward to it so much. And it just, there was no way her expectations were going to get met. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And Catherine basically sits with them and realizes that Henry is not at a greater advantage amongst his family. He seems quiet, and it's not that he's disagreeable, but he's not his normal self. And Miss Tilney, it's like she's very quiet and mousy, and it's just Catherine's so confused, and she's like, it can't be General Tilney. He's so kind to me.
Yeah. Well, and I, part of me wondered, I was like, did they hear out that Isabella and James were getting engaged? And they were like, oh, we don't want to be associated with the Thorpe family in any way.
But then why would General Tilney be kind to her?
Well, because he's a weird dude.
Fair.
I don't know. Lots of weird people in the world.
So, yeah, and then she talks to Isabella about it, and Isabella's just like, they're horrible people. And Catherine's like, I didn't say that. And she's like, yes, they just didn't talk to you, and they're horrible, and you should throw them out. And Catherine's like, that's nope. I
That's
just said
really
they were
bad
quiet.
advice.
Yeah. And again, this is where I'm like, Catherine is actually standing up and saying, I didn't say that. That's not what I meant. And Isabella's not listening, but
Yeah.
it's not because Catherine is just kind of passively sitting back and not saying anything.
Well, and I think that Isabella again tries to further the relationship or like label the relationship more deeply between Catherine and Tilney, in that she's like, but he was so attached to you. It's like, I mean, he danced with her a couple times and they chatted and like had tea and went for a walk, but it wasn't like he was like standing outside her window proclaiming his love for her.
Right. Like I said, Catherine pursues relationships with security. How she ended up with Isabel? Well, Isabel's manipulating and creating this false intimacy that I think Catherine sometimes sits back and is like, I guess it's nice she likes me that much.
I wonder if she thinks about it in the same way as she thinks about Isabella's love for her brother, of like, well, I guess that's nice. It's weird, but I guess it's nice.
Yeah. I like the Isabella's opinions of the Tilneys did not influence her friend. Again, we see this contrast of Isabella being this super insecure character who's trying to pull Catherine into her perspective. And Catherine's just like, no. And that it doesn't actually damage the relationship at this point that Catherine disagrees with her. Isabella might be extremely insecure about it.
But Catherine's not.
Yeah. Yeah, and then we meet Captain Tilney.
Yes, which I don't know, had it been mentioned before that Henry was not the oldest? Because I didn't recall
Yes.
that. It had been? Okay. I don't think I had clocked it. Because I was like, he has an older brother? Like, who's this dude? I'm so confused.
Yeah, his older brother, Captain Tilney. I like that Catherine is like very assessing. And I think it's interesting. I've been trying to figure out when is it the narrator's voice and when is it Catherine's voice, that she's basically decided that, okay, like he's fine. And I don't think he's more handsome than Henry, so that's a good sign. And I see him as inferior, but also like, okay, he's just whatever. But then there's this line, from the latter circumstance, it may be presumed that whatever might be our heroine's opinion of him, his admiration of her was not of a very dangerous kind, not likely to produce animosities between the brothers, nor persecution to the lady. He cannot be the instigator of the three villains in horsemen's gray coats by whom he'll hereafter be forced into a traveling chase and four, which will drive off with incredible speed.
I highlighted that section as well. I was like, oh, this is very foreboding. Like,
And it's like, is this the narrator's voice inserting some of that, like, Gothic mystery? Or is this Catherine, who's been reading Gothic mystery, who's like sitting in the ballroom with all these people around her, who's like, he won't kidnap me. Ugh, this is disappointing.
Do you think she's disappointed she's not going to get kidnapped?
But she's not going to have an adventure where Henry chases after her and saves her. She's just like, oh yeah, okay, he doesn't like me that way. Like, I think real Catherine is like happy that she has this secure attachment with Henry. But there's also this little fantasy part of her brain that's like, hey, I want to be kidnapped.
Okay. I don't know if I had read it. I don't know if I had read it at all as being outside of the narrator's voice. Like I don't think I had
Okay.
considered that it could be Catherine.
Okay.
So it's an interesting way to think about it.
We're gonna have fun with the movie.
Yeah. Well, and it's interesting to think about it from Catherine's perspective because I had kind of clocked that in the very first like maybe quarter of the book, we do hear a lot from the narrator. And there is a lot of that like author's own voice inserted. But I feel like we've had less and less of that.
Right.
So maybe that's why it stood out to me of like, oh, this like it's coming back in now. Like, what's going on here? So this is something to pay attention to.
Right. That he might force her into a traveling chaise four and drive off. But Catherine is just like, no, I get to have my happy time with Henry Tilney, listening with sparkling eyes to everything he'd said, and in finding him irresistible, became so herself.
Which is really sweet.
Yeah, that like the act of liking someone makes them want to be around you.
Yeah, it's just really sweet of without like explicitly saying it, it gives that feeling of like, oh, they're falling in love. They're forming an attachment.
And in like a really sweet way that they're just two people who are being themselves and really like each other.
Yeah. And they are really enjoying each other's company. And it almost gives the image that comes to mind is the like, oh, there's no one else in the room for them.
Yeah. That vision of like her sparkling eyes just looking at him.
Which is really sweet.
Yeah. And then Captain Tilney comes over and asks about Isabel.
And I love that Catherine's like, oh no, she's not going to dance tonight because Isabella had told her that. And
Yeah.
then what does she do? Dances with the new hot guy.
I'm gonna back up like a quick second to just like talk about one of the most relatable things that Catherine thinks in all of this. So Captain Tilney comes over and Catherine's alarmed and she thinks Captain Tilney must have heard some malvoyant misrepresentation of her, which he now hastened to communicate to his brother in hope of separating them forever. And I'm like, this is a little piece of why I go back to thinking that maybe Catherine's the one who's thinking that she's going to get kidnapped and not the narrator. But also, how relatable is that? Catherine's done nothing wrong ever. Ever. But she's sitting there with this anxiety of like, okay, something's being told to the boy that I like, and now he's going to hate me forever. And oh my God, I don't know what to do. What am I supposed to say? I just have to sit here. I just have to sit here. And she's just got this like very natural anxiety. And then it turns out that Captain Tilney's just poopy.
Yeah, well, and asking, hey, can I dance with her friend? What do we think?
Yeah. And then Catherine says no. And then Henry's like, okay. Catherine's like, I hope your brother's n not like gonna ask her. Like, he's mistaken. She won't dance with anybody. And this is where Tilney starts to give her the compliment. How very little trouble it can give you to understand the motives of other people's actions. And he's kind of mocking her for being naive and thinking positively about everybody in the world. And he kind of keeps going, trying to explain it. And she's like, I don't understand you. He's like, well, then we're on very unequal terms. I understand you perfectly well. And then I just love her being like, me? Yes, I cannot speak well enough to be unintelligible. She's like, explain yourself. Stop teasing me. What you talking about?
Yes. Well, and what I like about this is him saying, I understand you perfectly well, doesn't give me the ick that when Isabella has said, like, I know you better than you know yourself. Because it doesn't feel one-upping in this. It just feels like him being a little playful, teasing a little bit, and being like, you don't get me, but I get you. Like, you can just kind of hear the jovial aspect to it.
And bravo, an excellent satire on modern language. Like, he compliments her for insulting him. And I'm like, yes. She called you out, and you're just like, yes, yes. Look at you being smart right back in my face. And she's just like, okay, yes, I'm funny, but what are you talking about?
Yeah, I love that she's like, no, keep going.
Tell me what you mean. And he's like, it's going to embarrass you and bring on a disagreement. And she's like, no, it won't. I'm not afraid. Like, he's so good at like complimenting her while also like, you're so naive, but I love this about you, is what he's saying. I only meant that you're attributing my brother's wish of dancing with Miss Thorpe to good nature alone, and convince me of your being superior in good nature yourself to all the rest of the world.
There's like, what a nice compliment. Like, if someone said that to me, I'd be like, oh, you're so nice. Thank you.
Right? And Catherine does blush, and like, yeah. It's so, like, Henry Tilney. Master at complimenting.
He's a good flirt.
Yeah.
He's good at
Like,
it.
and so sweet, right? He's got that mix of like the right sort of zing and the right sort of sweet. Oh, I love him. I love him. Anyway.
And then I love that Isabella gets up and starts dancing with Captain Tilney, and I just wrote, no surprise. But there's this comment from Henry that says, and did Isabella never change her mind before? And it just feels so on the nose that, like, how many examples do we have of that through these last chapters that we've read of Isabella being saying one thing and doing another, like saying one thing and then saying something completely different in the next sentence? Like, she doesn't have a good foundation that she's standing on. She changes like the wind.
Yeah, and I think it's interesting that Henry has figured this out from watching her and also from everything that Catherine has said. But like, also, of course, Henry doesn't have a good opinion of Isabella. She's part of the reason that Catherine has lied to him, and that she's tried to get in between their relationship, and he's seen it. He hasn't called it out because he doesn't think it's his place to get in between Catherine and Isabella, which tells you that he is definitely the better person to Isabella, because Isabella has tried to get in between the two of them multiple times.
Oh, yeah. And as recently as the start of this chapter.
Right. I also like that Henry allows Catherine her opinion of Isabella to stand. He's like, I if you say that that's who your friend is, then it must be so, but I am gonna say that I'm not surprised that my brother is dancing with her.
Yeah, he's like, our opinions can differ on this and that's gonna be okay. And he's not trying to persuade her and say like, but she's a horrible person, you should know that. He's just
Yeah.
like, okay, that's what you think. And like, I'm not surprised by this.
He's not surprised by her brother. He does say, you bid me be surprised on your friend's account, and therefore I am. He lets her opinion stand, and that she has, even though he has obviously an opinion about Isabella that the rest of us do, he's just like, it's your friend. You know her better than I do. I know my brother better than you do.
Right. And he's like, that is not surprising from my brother.
Yeah, I think he also does a really good job in here of trying to convince Catherine that it's not such a big deal. Like, okay, she's dancing with my brother for an hour. It's fine.
Right. It's not going to be a big deal. They're just dancing. It's fine.
Yeah. Then Isabella comes back and is Isabella.
I tried to say no. It's like, did you?
Well, that's exactly what
Did you?
Catherine says, then why didn't you? And again, Catherine is doing like some It's not quite gray rocking because she's not giving no response, but she's giving very minimal responses.
She's just not engaging in the conversation in the way that Isabella wants her to.
It's interesting also to like hear the difference between how Isabel was talking about James and how she's talking about Captain Tilney, and the fact that she's kind of exaggerating, like it means nothing, but also all of the eyes in the room were upon us. Like there's ickiness to it.
Well, and then she has to do her thing of being like, oh, don't worry, I took him down several times because he's so conceited. Like she really has to also like continue to build herself up in it. Don't worry, I know I'm better than him.
And then the letter comes from James.
And there's this clause in there of you're going to have to wait 2 or 3 years before you can actually get married, before any of this can be arranged. And all I wrote was, thank goodness. Hopefully they will break up. That's a nice long engagement.
I also hear from Mrs. Thorpe here, the way that they talk about money is so weird. And okay, so 400 a year, not that small an income.
Yeah,
Like,
I mean, yeah, it's not 10,000 a year, but it's livable.
right? Well, no, 400 a year is like a high middle income house,
Right. So like they'll be well enough off.
which is like better than the Thorpes are doing.
But it's not enough. And I do appreciate that Catherine does question a little bit. She has this uncomfortable feeling of like, are you really just worried about the money?
Yeah,
Because
she's
that seems to be what you're talking a lot about. I think some of it is, I imagine Catherine can picture her life in Fullerton and what that looks like and what that means financially and what that's looked like with 10 children.
yeah, it was an income that could support that many kids.
Yeah. But I think she's thinking about that. And I think it's maybe even a little hard for her to compute that Isabella hasn't seen their life or seen their home. So she doesn't have a mental image of that.
No, she totally does. I think Catherine maybe is giving her the benefit of the doubt, but Isabella knows the what money looks like. She's poor. Of course she knows what money looks like. I think it's hilarious that they're like, you're so moderate. And yet they're saying that she needs more money than a household of 10.
Well, and I mean, they say she's so moderate, and I just don't agree. I like, no, that's not her. What I meant by like, she can't picture it, and that's what Catherine's thinking about. Not in the like terms of like dollar for dollar kind of thing, but Catherine has a good life and has a really happy life. And I don't think Catherine equates her family's wealth necessarily to her happiness. And so I think it's hard for Catherine to maybe extrapolate and explain to Isabella of like, but life is really good. And just to have like to be able to picture what that looks like, I guess.
Well, because Isabella can't, like, doesn't want to live a small life. She doesn't want to live where you see the same 20 people every single day, where your closest neighbors are the Allens. She doesn't want that kind of life, but she.
Well, yeah, and she says that like she doesn't think they'll live in Fullerton even.
And then they go on and, like, they call her father of, but everybody has their failings, you know, and everybody has a right to do what they like with their own money. And Catherine's like, fuck you guys. She's like, I'm very sure that my father has promised to do as much as he can afford. And she's just like putting an end to this. And Isabella's like, oh, we've gone too far.
It's also like you have to remember, James is the eldest of 10. There are
Yeah.
still young children at home who still need to be taken care of. Like, you can't just have everything and throw everyone else on the street.
It's such a weird sort of mentality, and I think maybe there's some false expectations of how much the Morlands actually have.
Yeah, which is why it's part of why I think this, like, there might be a con going on, is that, like, I think that the Thorpes have interpreted the Morlands for having more than they do, and so they're trying to take them for more than they have.
Yeah, and Isabella kind of recovers this. Catherine almost gets like to that point where she's like, oh, you're just in it for the money, and Isabella pulls back and she's like, oh, okay, maybe it's just the waiting period.
Mm-hmm.
And then we get to see some more Tilney action. What did you think of the invitation that came forth?
I think it's great. I was excited.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How did you think about how it was given?
I don't know if I put a lot of thought to it, if I'm honest. Okay. Like, there was a little bit of like, feels a little weird that General Tilney's just like bursting in being like, hey, you want to come stay at our house? Instead of like the peer being the one to ask. That feels a little weird. But I guess I kind of maybe give it a little bit of the benefit of the doubt of they're going to be leaving soon. So he's also kind of like, hey, if you haven't asked, we got to ask this person if she's coming with us because we're going to go soon.
Do you think it's weird that he went and asked the Allens before Catherine was asked?
Yes and no.
You hadn't thought about it.
No, I had thought about it. I think this is going to be the like weird comparison. It like makes me think a little bit about being a kid and when your parents would arrange play dates for you and how they would just discuss with other parents and then be like, hey, cool, we've done this thing. Like, oh, like, or then like after they've asked permission from the parents being like, hey, do you want to ask your friend if they want to come over? Knowing that it's already okay.
Your socialization was so much different than mine.
Okay.
I didn't have that.
Well, I'm sorry for you.
Are you? Because that sounds horrible.
No, like in good ways. Of like, they weren't asking like random strange children. It was my friend's like,
it wasn't like, the parents were trying to set you guys up.
No. But it was like,
you were already.
Yeah, I was already friends with these people. And then like, there was maybe some like behind the scenes work of the parents being like, oh yeah, like if your kid wants to come hang out, like that's totally cool. And then, you know, to help promote some socialization and some, you know, development in children, then asking to be like, hey, you should ask your friend, do they want to come over? Or you should ask their parent, even though the conversation had already happened. Not random strange children.
So, the thing that I think this just brings to light is that when we were younger, obviously, we were younger at different times, like, I'm older than you. I'm just realizing you had more friends. So yes. Mom could do that.
Yes. I also was the youngest and all of you were off at school. And so
right. Like, we didn't have people to play with. Mom wanted you occupied.
Exactly. Mom was arranging play dates so that I had things to do would be out of her hair.
Okay. But I guess in terms of this circumstance and that feeling of like your parents organizing things when you're 8, Miss Tilney is in her 20s.
Yes, I know. Yes. And it's why it's like it's a little weird. But also, I don't know. I don't know if it freaked me. It didn't creep me out. It was just kind of one of those things. Where
it's just
like,
bizarre.
Yeah, it was just a little weird. But I didn't clock it as like this is bad.
Well, and I guess that's kind of like the whole feeling that I have is that it's just a little, this interaction was bizarre. Mm-hmm. I guess that's the feeling that I think Catherine's kind of having about being around all three of the Tilneys at once. It's like, this is a weird family.
Yeah, there's an interesting dynamic she hasn't figured out yet.
Yeah.
And I don't think we've figured out yet.
Yeah. And then Catherine's super excited about going to an Abbey.
Mm-hmm.
And she doesn't understand. She doesn't understand why the Tilneys aren't more excited about it.
Yeah. You live in an abbey. Come on. So exciting.
And again, this is why my brain goes back to, is it Catherine who's like, well, his brother isn't going to kidnap me? Because she has these very fanciful thoughts. And I think Catherine understands the difference between her fantasy and reality. For the most part.
Yeah. Yeah, and we kind of hear that in her like musings of what Northanger will be like. You know,
Yeah.
it's long, damp passages, it's narrow cells in ruined chapel, or to be within her daily reach. She's thinking about all the things that are like, this is gonna be creepy. It's gonna be great.
She's such a goth.
Oh, yeah.
Like, Catherine would be like a sparkle goth who's just like the most optimistic and happy person in the world, who's also like, can we talk about vampires?
Yes, she would be the rainbow goth.
She is like, she totally would be into Henry Tilney role playing with her.
Yes.
100%. You be the bad guy, and you're gonna kidnap me, and I'm gonna scream, and then we'll make out in the carriage, okay?
Yes, exactly. I do appreciate that at least now I know why this book is called Northanger Abbey, because we spent a lot of time in Bath and had not heard of any abbeys. Yeah, we're about halfway through this book, and this is the first time we've had a mention of an abbey.
You're like, oh.
It would almost be like if Pride and Prejudice had been named Pemberley. Like, you
You get
spent
there.
very little time there.
You don't know how much time we're going to spend at Northanger. There's half a book left.
Yes, but it is a little bit. We've gone a long way without talking about any Abby, which
Yes.
hopefully means that, you know, the really like juicy, exciting stuff is coming up because we're getting to the titular location.
Yes, maybe the plot's gonna pick up a little bit.
I hope so. Well, I just hope we don't have the Thorpes around for a while.
Wouldn't that be nice?
Don't
No
think
more
we're done with
Thorpes.
them, but I do think that maybe we'll get a reprieve for a couple chapters.
What is your predictions about what's going to happen with the Thorpes?
I mean, if I'm leaning full gothic into it, I think there's going to be a time jump at some point, and Isabel is going to have murdered James for his money.
But he doesn't have that much money.
I mean, he's got more money than she does.
So you think that they're going to get married and she's going to murder him for his
Yeah,
money?
yeah. Not
Okay.
yet. That's why there's the time jump. They got
Okay.
married. If I'm going like full gothic on it, he's going to die and she's going to get all his money for some reason. If I'm like basing it maybe a little less out there, I think that, well, I hope that James and Isabella don't get married and that she's like found cheating with some man and disappears into the world. Yeah. And I think John Thorpe is going to come and try and kidnap Catherine from Northanger. And she's going to run through the halls and the ruins and, you know, have her.
Henry Tilney is going to have a sword fight and save her.
Yeah. She's going to live out her fantasy.
Okay. You're just there with Catherine.
Yeah.
Because I think Catherine would love that.
It's a gothic parody, so it's got to be something. And I feel like the sword fight, if this was written nowadays and it was like a parody as we think of parody now, they'd be fighting with like balloon swords.
Right.
I don't think that's going to happen in this book, but that's where if it was rewritten now, it would be like that comically bad.
Okay. Any other sort of like broader predictions? What do you think is going to happen with the Tilneys? What's up with their weird family dynamic? What are you reading into that, Teresa?
Maybe General Tilney's a ghost and only Catherine can see him. And so the other Tilneys are like, this girl's a little weird. She like just keeps talking to the air. Don't really know why. So that's my prediction. General Tilney's actually a ghost.
Okay. What was your favorite quote?
So I'm gonna like be a little tongue in cheek with this one because there are some really good quotes in here and some really like well written things. But the thing that stood out to me was it at the very start of chapter 15, it's Maria talking, and she said, John would have me go, for he vowed he would not drive her because she had such thick ankles. And she's talking about her sister Anne. And I just like, what an insult. It's like so deeply cutting because you can tell that definitely has to be something that Anne is insecure about. And she's just like, yeah, she's got thick ankles, and that's why my brother hates her. And it's just like such a good, like, young kid insult that just like cuts you so deeply, and you don't get why, but it hurts so bad.
So I'm laughing because I have that highlighted too. But for me, I highlighted it to show how damaged this fucking family is.
Oh, yeah.
That she's using her brother's body shaming against her sister.
Yeah. It is Mean Girl 101, like, as like deep and mean and horrible as you can go.
And she's framed it in such a way that her sister can get mad at her because John's the one who said it.
Exactly. It is, like, so masterfully done.
Yeah, which, like, I think Mean Girls might be an okay parallel for some of the Thorpes' actions. Mm-hmm. Of kind of, like, they're smart in a very specific way.
Yeah. What about you? What's your favorite quote?
My favorite quote is one that I mentioned already. Then we are on very... unequal terms, for I understand you perfectly well. Me? Yes, I cannot speak well enough to be unintelligible. And I just love that, like, snap back from Catherine, that Catherine's like, I have no idea what you're talking about. Yep. You're so smart, I don't know what you're saying. And then also his compliment, that whole conversation, but that he loves her for her flaws.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I only meant that your attributing my brother's wish to dance with Miss Thorpe to good nature alone convinced me of your being superior in good nature yourself to all the rest of the world. Ah, Mr. Tilney, come to bed with me.
That's all our intro's gonna be. All our clip.
That's it? Just over and over and over again? It is how I feel whenever he talks.
Mm.
Like, this is the thing. He says a lot of things that I'm like, you're such a shithead.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the way that he teases.
Yeah, he's a brat.
Like, yeah. And you know what? I love a brat because a good brat can be bratted back to.
Mm-hmm.
Right? That he's teasing, and what he wants is for Catherine to tease him back.
Yeah.
Which provides this very solid foundation of Catherine having a voice, of being able to disagree with him. It's like he would say something and she could say, you're being a shithead. And he'd be like, I know.
Yeah. They can be on equal footing in this relationship.
And I love it so much. It makes me so happy.
Well, I get why you love Mr. Tilney the most.
Yeah.
Granted, I haven't read all the others, so I only have Darcy to compare to him. But
how do you think Tilney's comparing to Darcy?
Well, so it's hard because right now we're watching the miniseries and we're still at the, like, weird, creepy, sulky Darcy. So that Darcy, I don't love. I think Darcy gets better.
Right.
I do think Tilney starts in a pretty good spot.
Yeah. There's just, like, a lot of secure attachment between these two. And mm-hmm. it's such a soft romance. There's not a ton of conflict that's happening between Henry Tilney and Catherine. The right. conflict's very external to that relationship. And the thing is, I love a good soft romance.
Mm.
I love a good romance that's secure and that the conflict is external to that relationship. I love that. That's, like, the best thing in the world.
Mm-hmm.
Just soft and sweet and two people who just fall for each other without neither of these two want to change the other one. They just like them for who they are. And that's mm-hmm. so sweet.
Yeah. Yep. It is that it's a very, they're very cute together. Like, yeah. That's how I would classify their relationship right now. It was very cute.
Which is, like, I think the level that their acquaintanceship should be at this point.
Yes.
Like, they're cute and they're, like, dipping their toes into love. They're not, like, there are other characters whose names I want to bring up that I can't, but they're not just, like, jumping headlong into, oh, I'm in love with them all of a sudden. It's right. like, It's gradual. They're getting to know each other. It's a realistic relationship. And it's so cute too. I love them.
Well, and I think that'll be interesting to think about, like, how Jane Austen writes about her relationships. Because right now we have, like, the soft romance of Northanger. We have the, like, massive character development of Pride and Prejudice. So it'll be interesting to see how she treats her different romantic partnerships.
Yes, I'm very curious. And we'll have to figure out which book we want to do next, because I think the complexities are only going to increase. I think Northanger is the most fun.
Yep.
Like I said, it's soft. Yeah, you're going to have to buckle up for some of the other ones. I'm kind of thinking we might do Emma next, because Emma kind of continues with some of the funny bits, and we can pull in some of the more serious conversations that happen within that. But we could just go full, like, opposite direction and make you read Mansfield Park, which is, we would just solely do for character analysis, because the romance is not as good.
Well, that's what you think, and maybe lots of other Janeites think, but I have not read it yet, so I have to form my own opinion, Kate.
Yes.
Likely that will be my opinion, but I have to form it on my own.
And then we could do Persuasion, which is one of my best friend Sandra's favorite, which is very tropey.
Mm-hmm.
And then we got Sense and Sensibility, which I don't know where I would classify it. Mm. It's great. It's just, yeah. We'll have to figure out which one we want to do next. We're halfway. So you know what, Teresa, in 6 months, we better have a decision.
It's true. It is about our average length to make it through a book is about a year. So, yeah. And we are sprinkling in, you know, right now, Pride and Prejudice content and things like that. So,
yeah. Anything else you wanted to add about these chapters? Any gushing you want to do over any particular character?
No, I don't feel super gushy about any of them right now. I know you want me to gush over Tilney. I'm just not there yet.
Okay. That's fine. I am so excited to get to my favorite chapter, where it's the moment that I fall fully in love with Tilney. And I'm starting to get the sneaking suspicion that I'm going to be so excited and explain it to you in depth about why it matters to me so much. And you're just going to sit back and be like, okay.
It's very possible. But what I will say is, like, I'm not a super gushy person in general, right? Like, that's not an energy I tap into all that often. So
got it. We're going to tap into that, Teresa. Okay. We're going to tap into it. I'm going to make you love Tilney.
Okay. Okay. I mean, I will say, like, he's doing very well in my books. I really like him, but I'm not at the point where I am head over heels in love with him yet.
Okay. Well, maybe one of the other heroes will.
We're also only halfway through this book, and we actually haven't seen Tilney that much in this book.
I guess so. Yeah. We're about to, like, increase our Tilney intake.
There we go.
So we're going to read 18, 19, and 20.
Woo.
And like I said, I'm really excited. Like, we're getting to the part of the book that I don't want to put it down, because I want to get to more Tilney stuff. I want to get to the romance is starting to bubble up. So I'm hoping you get that feeling too, that we'll finish the next three and you'll be like, okay, I want to know what happens next.
Okay. Well, that's good. That's a good sign. Thank you to everyone who's been listening. We really appreciate it. You can find us on social media at Austen Therapy Podcast on Instagram. And Kate's meme account is also on Instagram at Austen Therapy. We love when people comment. We like interacting with you all. It's a little bit of a highlight. Reminder not to give any spoilers, though, because I don't know what's happening. So, we're trying to keep that to a minimum. And we really appreciate everyone's feedback and excitement with us as we go through this.
Yeah. Teresa, as far as I know, hasn't been spoiled, because T doesn't log on super often to...
Shh, don't tell them that. I am very active on our social media pages, Kate.
But there is a possibility that T might see messages or comments. So to just remember to keep those spoiler free. If you want to spoil things, if you want to talk about what we're going to do next or give feedback about which hero is the best and who you think T is going to like the best, head over to Austin Therapy and I would be more than happy to engage in that discussion in messages.
Yeah, I don't have any access to that account. So you can talk and post. I actually don't. I can't look at it. Kate has forbidden me from looking at it because Kate will post things from other books and other content. And so I just don't see any of it just to keep myself spoil free. So we're having lots of fun with it, though.
Yeah. I hope everybody is enjoying listening to us ramble. Hey, Mom, we love you. And we will talk to you next time.
Bye.